Good afternoon, St. Louis. DGS on KMOX. Happy Wednesday to you, right? Yeah, Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Winnie the Pooh blustery
day. One of those days, yeah.
Today is a short show because we have a game coming up. The pregame will be at 2:10. Game will be at 3:10. Tomorrow we are off completely because it's opening day. And if you're at Kegs and Eggs, please say hello to us. We'll be down there. Wheels and Amy and Ronge will be broadcasting. I will be drunk. So, yeah, there you go.
Well, who's to say the rest of us won't be?
Well, you won't be. Come
That's
on,
true.
Kevin.
I won't be. I don't do that.
I don't know. Someone could sleep. Could slip him like a half a margarita.
That I mean, you could give me a whole one. It's not going to make me drunk.
Oh.
Kevin.
Get him. Go get him.
What?
Kevin.
How much do you think? Go ahead, Andrew.
Do you ever get tired of being like this, Kevin?
No, I just love. I love your guys' reaction. To be honest with you,
you ever get tired
every one of you guys, it's like shooting fish in a barrel.
Because
it
seems like, is that what it's like?
Because yeah. It seems like you just don't feel anything.
Oh, it might be true.
You have no highs or lows. You're
He's
just
like a fish.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like a fish.
Keep on swimming.
A big,
keep on
big,
swimming.
Big, big goldfish. Where's my bowl?
Baseball practice, eat a sandwich.
Yeah. Let's go.
Feeling good, not happy or sad.
All these little burp bubbles keep floating on the surface.
Oh, they're eating me.
Dang it.
Right.
Oh, interesting.
Sure, I'm being pulled quickly by that wire.
Kevin, they're eating you. Are you scared? I wouldn't say scared.
I don't have feelings.
Angry. No, I have angry. Angry and happy.
Oh boy.
Fish don't get angry.
No, that's true. Well, yeah.
You were affected. You were affected, like, was it last week, Rach, when he missed out on the sleep?
Oh yeah.
That's
the one thing that'll bring me down.
It did.
Yeah. The lack of sleep is the one thing that'll bring me down. Who saps the energy?
12 hours to 10.
Yeah.
Well, that night I think I slept 3.
Oh, that'll do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Man.
Kevin was like a toddler.
I was like,
throwing punches at the air.
Where's my binky?
We had a story just now on the news about how they are checking out the golf carts that you can take from Busch Stadium, and maybe they're not insured, XYZ. I took Rach and Wiggins and Andrew to the ball game a couple years ago. Was that pre-COVID? Could have been.
Yeah.
Was it really?
Mm-hmm.
God.
2019.
Duh, it's nuts. Anyway, so none of us wanted to walk back, and there was a guy on two guys on the rickshaw bikes, you know? and I'm like, hey, let's take these. It's like, okay, 2 and 2. I'm like, I call Rachel. And so it was me and Rage, and then the other guy had Wiggins and Andrew. No offense. But the guy was having kind of a hard time. And you know the thing you do where you stand up?
Yeah.
And
you lean real heavy.
And our guy's like, so you're from St. Louis.
Yeah, Wiggins is a real fat guy. It's a real big problem for Wiggins.
Did you feel bad for the dude?
Nah, he was fine. Because it's got wheels. If it didn't have wheels, I would feel bad for him. If he was like dragging me,
he wouldn't be.
If he was giving me a horseyback ride, yeah, I'd feel bad for him.
If he was carrying me, I'd feel terrible.
Yeah, if it was like a sled or something, that'd be awful.
There's a business. Let me carry you to your car.
Horseyback rides to your car.
I told him that too. I was like, oh, stop whining. You've got wheels.
What if he looked at you and said, no?
Oh, no.
I'm not doing that.
He just kept driving.
No.
Just kept biking.
I think I found my limit today, AIM, in the E-Mart.
Mm-hmm.
Something tells me I'm taking a COVID test later because of the sloppy Joe I ate.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You ate a sloppy, that's what you were eating?
That's what I was eating.
Wow, that's risky.
Man.
I know.
Oh my gosh, that's way worse than the value turkey.
I'm living my life.
Good thing you're done at 2:10.
One way or the other.
Ugh. As questionable as everything in there is, I'm so surprised you would look at the thing that says sloppy and be like, yeah, this one.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what caused that. Game last night, recap, Wheels, Ronge.
The Cardinals look like a different team when they're not facing the Dodgers.
They sure do.
No, and look, Yu Darvish is good. And they didn't pound Yu Darvish. It wasn't like I think they had 6 hits and, you know, 6 runs, something like that. But Michaelis was good. You know, they had a couple of nice defensive plays. They got a couple of timely hits. A little help with some bad defense from the Padres. And now you've won the first two and you got a chance to sweep today.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to be fine. They're not going to be great. They're not going to be terrible. They're going to be fine. Like, it's just going to be...
Which, if we sweep, is that 3-3?
No, you'd be 4-3 if you sweep the Padres, and 3-4 if you lose.
Okay.
And, Ronch, how long has this been a thing in baseball where they talk about, you know, if you can just get out of the West Coast swings without getting smoked? Like, everybody talks about the difficulty of playing on the West Coast swings. A 3-4 West Coast trip throughout, I don't know what you say, the last 60, 70, 80 years in baseball would be considered totally fine.
Yeah, it'd be fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think, I wonder how pessimistic people are generally about them.
Big time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you did an actual poll, a scientific poll, if it's not just Twitter people.
I'd say if you ask Twitter people, it's 90% negative.
I wonder. But you know what, though?
The view of the team this year.
Oh, okay.
And if you ask just people that'll be at the game tomorrow, I bet it's way more positive.
If we're being honest, though, if you're paying close attention to them, I don't think that the people who do have a negative opinion of them or are, down on their prospects, I don't think they're necessarily wrong for thinking
maybe not.
It.
Maybe not.
Just because, yeah, I don't think, you said they'll be fine, right?
Yeah.
I think people want better than fine.
Yes, they do, and they deserve better than fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's really the issue, is that they feel like this team is fine, but they want it to be really good.
Yeah.
No, go ahead, Amy.
Oh, no, I was going to say, do you think they feel like it's fine? I don't know that they feel like it's fine.
Cardinals
the
fans?
Twitter fans do not think so.
Yeah, I feel like, and I'm not as, I'm not as baseball-y and I'm not as online baseball-y as you. But I've, talking to kind of casual fans, everyone's like, ugh, I don't know. Like, which doesn't seem
I get that from casual fans, too.
It's a fair reaction after last year. Because last year's the worst year in 20 years. So more than 20 years. I don't know exactly. It was like, 30, 35 years since they were that bad? I know it was 2000, what was the last losing season? 2007?
Yeah. I don't remember the last.
But the point is, the last time they were that bad was 30 years ago. So, yes, that's a normal reaction when you're coming off a terrible year.
You know what I keep hearing, and they could be wrong, but this is the same thing I said to you earlier in the week, Wheels. I said, it just seems to me, and it really does seem to me because I've done zero research, and I think that you, the way you explained it, I am wrong empirically, but I said it feels like the Cardinals always try to get bargains and then sprinkle the magic Cardinal dust, and then we win. And you were explaining, well, we have like the 12th highest, and compared to our revenues, we're spending more of our like GDP than like the Dodgers or the Mets or the Yankees or anything. So that's not really true, but people keep saying that back to me.
Yeah. That's definitely the impression. You know, people are always like, they just need to spend more. I don't think that what they spend is a problem. They're spending more than Tampa Bay. They're spending more than a lot of teams that are regularly better than the Cardinals. The problem isn't what they're spending. The problem is they've stopped developing young pitching. For the longest time, they had a new guy every year or every other year. It was Jaime Garcia and Lance Lynn and Michael Wacha and Carlos Martinez and Jack Flaherty. And those guys would all have, even if they didn't last forever, they would all have 2-3-4 year windows where they were really good. Well, really good, cheap pitching production is valuable. And they haven't gotten that for now since Jack Flaherty flamed out. Mm-hmm. Right. Since Jack Flaherty started having arm problems and stopped being good, they haven't brought up another guy from the minors that replaced that. That was their superpower when they were making runs under Tony La Russa. That was their superpower right after La Russa left and they were still making runs deep into the postseason, was they always had one or two of those guys arriving and helping. Mm-hmm. And they haven't done that now for 5 or 6 years. I mean, Jack Flaherty made it to free agency and he's the last guy that fits that description. So that means he's 6 years since his major league debut, and you have brought up no starting pitchers of consequence. And that's so if you're mad about something, you should be mad about why are they now failing at that? Mm-hmm. Because that's why, like, you see what they did this offseason with Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson and Sonny Gray. They don't normally do that, but they had to because they've missed on developing pitchers now for 5 or 6 years.
Now, obviously, Mozeliak didn't say, hey, let's forget about having a really great starting pitcher every year. They're trying to do it. Is it just a matter of it's really hard to do that? Or do you think that there's something that they could be doing and they're not?
I'd be curious on your take first.
You talked about yesterday. Wasn't it yesterday we had the conversation about...
Off air or on air?
I thought it was in this room about just their I don't want to call it advanced analytics, but more their labs.
Their training techniques are behind.
Yes, they're not quite where other teams are. Some of the more cutting edge teams with their technology and how they use it, They're not quite there.
It's a combination of how they're training guys and who they're drafting, right? Because they draft a lot of guys that are their old profile, right? They're the Lance Lynn profile. When Lance Lynn was coming out of college, he was a workhorse, low 90s, sinker slider, and they've always loved those guys. They love those guys. And that's what Michael McGreevy is. You know, that's what a lot of their young pitching prospects are, but they don't do it. Just by seeing results, not talking about whether they're trying or not, I don't think they have a pitching lab. Most teams do, and guys, like all of the big Division I college baseball teams have that. Vanderbilt has that. If Vanderbilt has that, a major league team should have that. If you don't have that ability to take a pitcher and say, all right, you're throwing 93 now, we can get you to 96 by using biometric studies, by looking at biomechanics and how does your body move and how much stronger can we get you here. This is happening at the amateur level all across baseball. This is happening at the high school level, the college level, and we're not seeing that from the Cardinals.
Seems like a pretty big miss.
It is.
Well, here's part of the problem, I think, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but they seem to be, and it's not just exclusive to them because a lot of teams end up falling into this trap where they are slower to recognize that the old successful way they used to do things, which worked for decades, so why wouldn't it just keep working, doesn't work anymore, and they need to adjust. They seem to be a little slower at getting to that result.
That's my exact read, is they had success with it, and for a long time, like, we don't want to change because we've had success,
right?
Which is a totally understandable thing.
You know
but,
what it reminds me of?
Hmm.
Radio.
Good point, yeah. Yeah.
Think how much our
for
job
a long
has
time.
Changed.
And, or look at the difference when you went from the journals to PPM. And, you know, for a long time, nobody changed anything because they didn't think they needed to.
Mm-hmm.
And then the PPM comes in, you're like, oh,
the metrics changed.
We need to start paying attention. Yeah.
I think every team that finishes under 500 gets to use steroids the next year.
Has to.
Has to. Yeah. To keep things interesting.
They have to hold them down and inject them.
Oh, man. So it's a combination of how you scout players and also what you do with training techniques to get more out of people. Not just velocity. It's also I'll make it fast because it's nerdy. Pitch shape is something people talk about a lot. What shape is your slider? How much does it break? And when does it break? Like, all this stuff is the nerdy scientific stuff that everybody's doing. And if you're not doing it as well as other people, the only way around it is to pay for it. And pitching is expensive if you're paying for it, and it's risky because pitchers get hurt more than position players do.
But the other option is steroids.
Like, it would keep fan engagement. Like, what if we're like, oh, man, we still don't have pitching, but can you imagine Goldsmith?
Are you thinking of the all-drug Olympics, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
That's actually happening,
and
isn't
Arenado
it?
On
what, the all-drug Olympics?
Yeah.
What proposed.
About the bottom half? The players have to take steroids, and their fans get to.
Oh,
I don't think you want the fans, and you have roid rage.
Exactly.
Or you can just make excitement. It so that when you finish in last place, your fans get edibles and they can enjoy the game anyway.
Oh, there you go.
Kevin advocating for edibles?
Yeah, you're working.
I got no problem with edibles.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
The last time the Cardinals were really bad in the 90s, they also had steroids, which made it fun to watch. I just think if you're bad, you
need somebody to hit 70 home runs.
Yeah, you get to take steroids. Try again next year.
Yeah, we'll see you next year, big boy. 125 DGS. We have Devin Alexander, boxing champion, coming up live in studio on the other side of the break. Ron, do you ever just feel like not quite manly enough?
Oh, never.
I have an answer for you.
Okay.
You got 18,000 extra bucks?
Sure. What do you need?
Alpha Camp.
Oh, is it the Nick Adams guy?
You can go to Alpha Camp for only $18,000.
Is it? Mm-hmm. Is it him?
I think it's him.
Who's Nick Adams?
He's like is he Australian? What is he?
He is.
I
think it's a gag. It's I really do.
Bit.
I think it is.
I think it is too.
It's not a bit.
I think it's
he's
a bit.
Not. He's not. How do I put this? He would have let the bit drop at some point over the last 10 years. Because if you don't, then it's not a bit.
Andy Kaufman kept it up his entire life.
He's not Andy Kaufman.
No.
He's not Andy Kaufman.
Well, I'm saying it can be done.
Anyway, yeah, he does
Looks like Andy's been to Alpha Camp.
I mean, because the things that he says are super ridiculous, like real men only eat at Hooters, like stuff like that.
Yeah,
nothing that even bros would think.
Only eat at Hooters.
Yeah.
I don't think he's like secretly liberal or something, Andrew.
No, right, right.
But I think it's an account designed to troll you and to hook you in with the ridiculous. Like Kevin was saying,
it makes him famous. It makes
is
him money.
Like 4-year Letterman.
I think
it's like that, but maybe not quite as
but
over
again,
the top.
Again, okay, so Kevin, if you just say outlandish, like let's say MAGA things like Nick Adams does, right? If you do that, right, nonstop, never dropping the bit for like a decade, then you're not doing a troll bit. You're just that person. Right. If you don't ever drop the bit, then that's just who you are. Then at that point,
so
you've Larry the Cable Guide. You've transcended
Larry
the mask.
Cable Guide.
You've transcended the mask. And
actually, I think that's
the
thing is Larry the Cable Guy.
If you and you're right about that, if you see Larry the Cable Guy's early stuff, he didn't sound like that.
No.
Well, no, that's not even his name.
It's not how he is in real life.
That's not even what his name is. But he said many times he's afraid to not be Larry the Cable Guy because he's afraid of losing the voice.
So $18,000. I could do it. Dave, let's go. You want to split it?
Then we can be half a man.
What is two half men becoming an alpha man? What do you call that?
Andrew.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn.
Is this one of those boot camp things?
Yeah. What else could it be?
Like you got former Navy SEALs there teaching and all that?
Yeah.
I made that joke while texting with Devin Alexander.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Because there was a guy, I think I told you, Dave, off air, but there was a guy that was making fun of those alpha male boot camp things. And he said, you know, instead of spending thousands of dollars to go to there, you could actually get paid to go to real boot camp and sign up to join the Army.
Yeah, they'll make a real man out of you.
And the picture was an Army recruiter sitting in a chair pointing to an empty chair like, have a seat, buddy.
I want the valor without the danger, though, you know?
Right. Yeah, I want to get shot at.
So do I.
I don't know. Maybe just steal the valor. I don't know.
Yes. Let me steal that valor.
35 DGS coming up in about 10 minutes. We have boxing champ and all-around good guy Devin Alexander. Stairway Kevin, Kev.
All right, let's talk about it. I know we've talked about and you're interested in simulation theory.
Very.
And this is not necessarily about that in particular, but it is about the potential creation of that.
Ooh.
Because AI is coming so fast. And when, as George has said many times, you know, when you get to the quantum computing level and we start processing these things faster, think about how hard it is to distinguish a real video from a fake video or real audio from a fake audio now. Think about 10 years down the road. Do we get to a point where we cannot tell the difference because of AI? Because I saw somebody that is a technology expert who has written about simulation theory. And he was talking about, while now we have this theory that seems plausible, and the closer we get to this technological advancement, the closer we get to quantum computing and the vast improvements in AI over time, how long does it get before, if you're placed into an AI environment, let's say you put a headset on, that you cannot tell the difference?
Yeah.
I think pretty soon.
And then how do we handle that?
I think we're preparing for it now. People say all the time, like, we live in this post-truth society with alternative facts. And, I mean, what is the truth, really? In 2024, it feels like it's whatever you feel. It's whatever you believe, even if you are presented with facts that, you know, completely blow your belief out of the water. You can still cling to that belief. I feel like with AI, it's just going to become, people are just going to become more entrenched because they can create anything. They can disprove anything. I mean, it will soon be, look at how great this technology looks now. I mean, you watch these kind of videos and like, maybe we've all seen the video of the labs playing in the snow when Sora came out, and people were like, well, it looks weird because they have an extra paw. Okay, but it still really looks like dogs. And this is like our first crack at it. It's only going to get better and better.
Yeah. So on that same note, since we're talking about simulation and everybody talks about the Matrix or living in the Matrix, how many people do you think would opt in for the blue pill if that's given to you as an option? Where you're not going to be a human battery like in the movie, but you'll be fed intravenously. Your body will be taken care of however it needs to be to keep you alive.
I just saw a story today about how many people in the Netherlands are choosing assisted suicide. Mm. And there was a story about a woman who's 28 years old. She's married, but she's depressed, and she has an appointment in May. And she's just living her best life until then, and then she will be put to sleep like a dog, basically in the same kind of way. I would have to believe that if someone like that, if you gave them the choice and said, look, I know you're unhappy in this life. We can put you to sleep, but keep you alive and you can live whatever life you want. I'd have to believe they would choose that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the interesting thing, too. Like, do you do that when you get to be 80?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying everybody would. I'm saying if you're single right. and you're alone, but you could go be young in this simulation, you your brain doesn't know the difference.
You live another 10 years being 22 years old.
And who's to say there won't be plenty of people kind of half in, half out? Like, yeah, I went to work today, and then when I got home, I got in my little Matrix pod.
I think that's going to be Black Mirror. That's going to be super common.
We already do it.
Yeah.
You do it.
I do it with video games.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's going to be a lot different when you're in a headset. And I would assume what's going to end up happening is it'll be like Ready Player Go. Did you see that movie? Mm-hmm. Or maybe that's not the right
Ready
term.
Ready Player One.
Ready Player One, where you're in a suit. Where you're feeling all the senses. So if you touch something in there, you're feeling it. If you get hit, you feel getting hit.
We will see that.
Yeah, that's there's no question. Even just for entertainment purposes alone, people are going to want that.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of having the tech to make it practical so that people could purchase it.
Yeah.
And I was just fascinated by that conversation of how many people might choose the blue pill. Be like, I hate where I am. I don't have any money. I don't do whatever. Now, you're probably going to have to foot the bill for
what about this?
This.
What if instead of sending people to prison, we put them to sleep and we send them to a nice place? Would that offend you as someone saying, hey, you should be being punished?
Hmm.
That's an interesting. I mean, like, you're out of society.
Out of society.
You are no longer a threat to anybody.
Not a danger.
That's a really interesting question.
Yeah. Maybe you could work up to a nice place.
Maybe you earn yourself a better place. Maybe it starts plain. But again, how do you earn it if you're just virtually living?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be something if your brain could actually learn while in one of those things.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I'm just fascinated by the idea that you could just opt out of what you're not happy with. And not by taking your life, not by doing what you're talking about with the woman in the Netherlands, but being like, you know what? Maybe it's one of those deals where you have to come out of it for a couple hours a day to do some exercise, to walk around, eat something or whatever. But most of your time you could spend in this simulation. And who says there are any rules? Maybe you can fly. Maybe you're a superhero. Maybe it's the metaverse and you're interacting with other people. Maybe it's just your own little world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think about how the worlds are created with video games. And how detailed and deep they are.
Well, think about the responsibilities and the ethics that if we can create our own little simulation world,
yeah.
And there's some chance of these little beings becoming sentient, like a super, super Sims kind of deal, what kind of responsibility do we have as their quote unquote God?
Hmm.
What if they're unhappy? What if they're making the same questions that we're making?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Well, in that case, though, if they're not real, right? Because they're not. But with AI, they could be somewhat sentient.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, man. Didn't think it was going to go there.
Yeah.
It's like Westworld or something.
Oh, that's it.
Dude, I have Westworld on my TikTok now.
Yeah.
Rach and I got into the first couple of seasons.
Yeah, I watched the whole thing.
It is so troubling. They're just straight up sexually assaulting the robots.
Yeah.
Which
I knew at the time, but I was
sentient,
so into the story.
Yeah.
Now you go back and you're like, dang.
Did you? I fell off after like the third season.
Yeah,
same thing.
I tried it and it was Welcome back, guys. DGS. Honored to have the champ, Devin Alexander, in studio with us. Devin has the Devin Alexander's Amateur Boxing Invitational Classic presented by the Urban League STL coming up this Saturday, April 6th, 5 p.m. at Harris Stowe University Emerson Performance Center. And he's with us now. Great to meet you, Devin.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah,
man.
Congratulations.
Glad to be here.
Congratulations on your success. Congratulations on all of it.
Thank you, my man. A lot of hard work. A lot of dedication.
Hard work, brother. Yeah.
A lot of punches.
That's right.
A lot of push-ups, sit-ups, miles.
Talking about the difference between the way your kids are growing up, the way you grew up. Tell us about the way you grew up pre-boxing and once you got involved in the sport.
Oh, man, I grew up North St. Louis. And if you know anything around the 1990s, North St. Louis is full of gangs, full of shootings, killings. I mean, I saw it all as a kid. And, you know, as a kid, when you grow up in it, you don't know if it's good or bad. If that's all you know, you don't know if it, so I got a taste of reality when I first was able to travel for a tournament, boxing tournament. And at 12, I said, whoa, I am really poor. I'm in a situation where it's bad. You know, that's when I really realized that I was a kid that was really poor. And that's what changed my mindset, too. I kicked in overdrive with my boxing. I said, yeah. Oh, no, I got to get out of here because I cannot stay here.
Yeah.
I got to do something.
That makes so much sense. Mm. I've talked about I grew up very lower middle class, but everyone else did too in my neighborhood. And then I saw a brick house. I'm like, what the hell is that? And so it would be the same growing up in North St. Louis. You look around, everyone's doing the same thing.
Yes.
Does, you don't look around and go like, I'm getting out of this place. It's where you live.
You see vacant buildings. You see, you know, crackheads walking down the street, you know, talking to themselves. Something kids should not be seeing at all. And it was just my circumstances at that moment. And I just knew I had to work hard. I was instilled to work hard. And that's what I did. That's the only way. And God really facilitated me to stay away from gangs, drugs, everything. And I really believe that he saved me.
Did the bad guys in your neighborhood give you a pass once you became a really good boxer? Did they still come at you to try to recruit you? Or once you were something, were they like, leave this kid alone?
Well, one thing that people don't understand, if you're not trying to portray that, they're not going to bother you. They're not even going to come to you with that type of energy. So if you bring it off that I want to be hard energy, I want to be in a gang energy.
Yeah.
I never portrayed that. I was in it, but I wasn't in it. My mindset was I need to work hard to get my butt out of here. So that's the type of mindset I had. They wasn't recruiting me. Anyway, I didn't have the urge to. I don't get it. I just never got it. Why would somebody want to go stand on the corner and just do nothing? I just never got why would anybody just want to just sit there and just be gangbanging, arguing over a street you don't own, shooting at somebody that you don't even know.
Yeah.
I didn't understand it, so I had to get out.
Yeah. Did you take to boxing pretty quick? Was it pretty evident pretty early that you had a shot?
No.
No?
No. No. I got tore up. The first time I sparred, my nose was bleeding. I was crying. But the difference was I needed that back. I wanted it back. So I knew I had the heart. And most of the time, when you get tore up like I did, you ain't coming back. You're like, Mom, I ain't going back to that.
I'm joining the game, Mom.
No way. No way. So I was like, okay, you got the goods that time. But yeah. See if you can take it when I dish it. So about 6 months later, I got that back.
Nice.
I got it back. So I was determined. I was mad. I was crying too, but it wasn't that I was so destroyed where I said, I'm coming back from this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it hurt it the first time, but I'm coming back.
Yeah. So now, I saw you on TV the other day. Now you're working with kids your age when you started. Tell us about that, and then tell us about the event on Saturday.
Man, so real to just like a 360 what I did. I grew up just like the kids I'm helping now. And I'm able to come back. I was just that kid where somebody that made it, like a lawyer, doctor, would come to the school and talk. And it just seems like I was just that kid that I'm talking to right now. So I feel grateful that I'm able to do that, that I stayed the course. And I'm just grateful that I'm able to come back and give back to these kids. Because that's what the ultimate goal that I wanted. That's the reason why I made it. Is to come back and help these kids. I know they're going to need it. They don't have too many role models to look at. So I want to be that light. Look, I started just like you. Nothing was handed to me. Yes, it's going to be hard. Is it going to be easy? No. But you got to stay the course. Whatever you choose to do in life, you got to work hard, stay consistent, and you will see success. So that's the reason why I'm doing this show at Harris Stowe. I teamed up with the Urban League. James Clark, and we are trying to just give back to these kids and put a platform with the kids that are doing something positive. Because not all kids are out here doing bad. And we see that on the news a lot where, yes, we see the kid bashing the girl in the head for, yes, we see the stabbing, yes. But we also have kids that is trying. So I want to push that as well. Yes, that's bad. And, you know, we need to see what's going on. But we got kids that is trying. So that's
that may be the best point you made this whole time.
Yeah.
It's a new thought to me because so many times when we'll see a story about North St. Louis, we'll think either, oh, that's a bad kid, or it's a Devin Alexander, man, who made it out and he's a boxer, he's a this, he's a that. Most people are just people.
Absolutely.
They're just doing their thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the kids, that the problem was going on, what I see is they need male role models. They're missing that. So everybody, most of 90% of the kids I run into, they don't have a male role model to look at it, to model after. So what are you going to do? You're going to wing it, or you're going to look at TV, look at the rappers, and that's bad. Because a clean-cut young man is not going to be pan-sagging, cursing. You're going to say yes, sir, no. No, sir. Yes. No, sir. Stuff like that. And that's what's missing with today's kid and youth that I see with the kids I'm around. And I'm trying to just help them with that. Help them try to not go that way that I see so many kids go. You would rather be clean cut. You would rather be a stand-up citizen, not creating a felony for yourself at 16 years old. You would rather be a clean cut, get you a job, get you a family, marry somebody you love, and just be a stand-up person. That's what I'm trying to teach.
Just live a life.
Kids. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it's about. Too many kids just sadly just losing their life in the blink of a head, just like that.
So the event is this Saturday, April 6th, 5 p.m., Harris Stowe University in the Emerson Performance Center. That's Devin Alexander. Please come back anytime you want, man.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You are welcome.